Drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Michael.
Hey, Phil. How's it going? Yeah. Thanks for meeting me in my local.
I am. We often meet down at our other subsidiary to the Britain Yankee, down my way. Now we're in yours. We're in Batavia. Where are we?
We're at the Coach House, which some of the older listeners may remember. We've done a recording or two up here, too.
We have. Was I there?
yes, in spirit. Okay, I don't know about in body.
Today's show is a little bit different. Number one, we're sitting relaxing. Mm-hmm. It's post Labor Day. It's a beautiful day outside, but we wanted to come inside.
Right.
We don't like all those mosquitoes, do we?
No, we don't.
Oh. And we're relaxing here, enjoying a beverage. You have what?
Rocky's Revenge. It's a brown ale.
I think that's Tyrannina or whatever.
Yeah, I think so.
I better look that one up. Tyrannina. I think they're a Wisconsin brewery.
Okay.
Yep. And I'm enjoying Old Rasputin on Nitro by the North Coast Brewery. And that's very heavy, I think it's an Imperial Stout.
Yeah, it is an Imperial Stout.
Yes, Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
Quite delicioso.
It's like a meal in a glass.
I haven't tasted it yet, but we will.
It looks really nice.
So as I say, a little different show today because, Mike, would you say about starting a brewery from the bottom up, scratch? How would you go about it?
I have no idea. That has got to be one of the hardest things. I mean, it's got to be up there with trying to start a restaurant or trying to start any kind of small business. But that's so involved. So not even talking money, but just all the paperwork involved with a brewery and starting a brewery and a tap house. Oh, I couldn't fathom it.
Red tape.
Oh, my God,
yes. A lot of it. But the bottom line is, are you going to get good beer? Well, you know what?
Yeah.
We're going to find out today, because we're going to be visiting a little bit up the Fox River, about a couple of miles up the Fox River from where we are now, in Geneva, Illinois.
Ooh, close.
And we're going to be meeting with a couple of guys who are doing just that at the Penrose Brewing Company.
Yeah,
Eric and Tom.
We're meeting with Eric and Tom today.
So
look forward to that.
Oh, pardon?
I said I look forward to that.
I always look forward to it.
Yeah.
So I guess we should sit back, enjoy, relax, and just hear what they have to say. And then we'll be back in the pub, I think, for the next show.
Well, I think so, because we've been on the road for a while.
Oh, by the way, what show is this? It's show
110.
Yes, isn't it amazing?
Yeah, we went through 109, part 1 and 2.
Yes, there you go.
But now we're on 110. Boy, we're really moving along for some show that hardly ever records.
We're moving along at a snail's pace.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, boys and girls, enjoy this, and we're looking forward to returning to the brewery once they got the taps flowing. Mike, are we in the right place?
don't know. It's
pretty echoey in here. There's nobody in here.
There's like an empty office.
This is like a dump. What's going on? Like, wait a minute. There's a guy over there. Hey, how are you?
Hello.
Hey. Hey, how are you?
How you doing?
What's your name?
Eric Hobbs.
Eric, how are you? You're the guy. This is Lingo. He's at the Yankee, and I'm a U.S. Brit.
Brilliant.
Phil, I'm the Brit. Actually, folks, we had had conversations with Eric over email for quite some time, and we have been wanting to come in because there's a new brewery in town, folks. And when I say town, where are we, Mike?
Geneva, Illinois.
Geneva, Illinois, just on the Fox River.
Yes.
Eric.
Yes.
I didn't mean to insult you by saying it was a dump, because I think ahead of this you had actually described it as that yourself.
We are days from beginning our build out, so as in its current form, it is truly a dump.
And it's amazing, folks. Mike will take some pictures and we'll post this up on the web. But we're looking at ground floor space.
Yeah, this is
none of the big.
This
tanks.
Is like square one. This is
tanks.
This is where
down.
This is where it starts. Yeah, tanks, I mean, you total empty slate. Where they demolish everything, build up the way they want it. This is a true. You know, we get to be in here and see the two differences because we've already been invited back once everything's done.
Yeah,
and we get to see the finished product afterwards when they get everything put in. This is really cool.
So tell us, Eric. So you obviously having a lot of work going on here,
right?
What number one? How did you get into this? Where are you right now? I think you guys had something to do with Goose Island the way back, right?
Yep. I've been in the business now for about 10 years, but I've been on the sales and marketing side. My partner has been in the business about the same amount of time, but he's been in brewing operations. So Tom Quarter is the brewmaster at the project. But unfortunately, he's headed down to the city for another obligation. But we've been doing this, we've been working on this project for probably almost 3 years now. So the last 5-6 years of our lives were spent with Goose Island and Anheuser-Busch InBev, respectively, after the buyout. And, you know, prior to then, we had kind of decided the two of us wanted to go a different direction and had put our heads together and come up with a collective idea of this is what we want to do and this is when we want to do it. And, you know, then actually when the AB buyout happened, it was more of just a, hey, you know, let's push this thing into high gear and let's move along.
So did they dump you?
They did not dump me. No.
Yeah, I know how these corporate buyouts
happen. After the Goose buyout, I was moved into a regional management role for Anheuser-Busch. So I actually kind of worked with their entire high-end portfolio for about 12 months before I came on board fully with Penrose. So it was a unique perspective for sure, though. You know, there's not a lot of guys in my position opening a craft brewery that have spent time running multiple states, talking about pricing, talking about strategy and stuff like that with Anheuser-Busch guys. You know, it gave me a unique perspective. I got a lot more respect for those guys after seeing how they operate and seeing the amount that they're tasked with managing, both from brewing side as well as just kind of, you know, managing their wholesaler and their retail relationship. So
how did you get to come out to Geneva, Illinois? Are you guys local here, or is this
I grew up here.
Okay.
I grew up here. I was aware of what was kind of happening around here. The downtown area itself right now is pretty buzzing right now, as you guys might have noticed coming into town with one of its many local festivals. Today is Festival of the Vine, so a little bit more wine focused.
Are we going to have a festival of the hops now?
I'm not going to say we're going to have a festival of the hops, but what we might do is we might introduce some of these wine folks up the street to some pretty tasty beers, perhaps some tasty beers that have been aged in wine barrels.
Now I have to. I was just going to say I have to bow to Lingo's knowledge of this area, because Lingo, you used to live just up the road, right?
Yeah, not more than a couple blocks away up here, right next to the park.
No kidding.
I rented the house up here many years ago, back in the late 70s.
And you were born around here?
Yes, I was born and raised in St. Charles. I was born in Geneva at the old community hospital here.
Oh, there you go. You see, so we're all local. So
yes, bring it all back
hence
home.
Our interest.
Yes,
right. And the Britain Yankee Pub is actually in West Chicago.
Right.
In my basement. But
yeah, you told me that. That's
but
awesome.
We're all very, very interested in local. Mm-hmm. So tell us, you come from Goose Island. You got a great, you know, pedigree in terms of how to run a business. This has got to be quite an undertaking, both financially and work hours for you.
Yeah, I think Tom and I would both agree that once we once we went full board on, you know, we had the financials lined up. We had this is actually our second property we were targeting for this project. Once we had this lined up, and we were putting in hours and hours and hours extra on top of our jobs, it was getting to the point where it wasn't fair for us to continue to have our day jobs. So we, of course, I put in my notice and said, I need to focus on this during the day hours, because I found myself stepping out of the office all too often to have a phone call in private just to kind of address something that was going on with Penrose while still trying to do my best with my other job. You know, I'm not the type of guy that has any ill will towards any of the mega brewers, having now worked with one of them. I definitely think that, I wanted to do my best for them when they were paying me. And now that we're all in on this, though, yes, things have just continued to escalate and move forward, and the pile has gotten bigger.
Well, you must have been there when, what was it, Mike? We were out there visiting with one of our podcasting friends from the UK. This must have been, 5 years ago now?
It was 2005, 2006.
Yep. So Goose Island, at that time, of course, was still private. Yep. We were treated like royalty. Very, very nice folks. Loved the beers and everything. Time changes. So as you see, in the last 5 years, I think craft beer has really exploded. How many of these are we're doing one of these a week almost.
It seems like we've done probably four or five in the last 2 months.
Right. Yep. And we were down a couple of weeks ago at the Midwest Brewers Fest.
Yep, I listened to that podcast.
Of course, we didn't see you there, but obvious reasons. Yep. Well, tell us a little bit about what you're aiming to do here, your beer styles, because I think from what we read on your very limited website at present, you've got something interesting going on.
Yeah, well, Tom and I are both pretty excited about the idea of Belgian beers, Belgian-inspired beers, just because I think the variety and the kind of the wide array of latitude you have with the utilization of Belgian yeast strains gives us a lot of different flavors and complexities to play with, while keeping beers very low ABV and pretty simple, for lack of a better word. We like to do some things that are a bit more straightforward with, you know, beers like a Belgian single, a Belgian-inspired pale, black ale, French Saison, ironically enough. All these beers under 6%, all these beers relatively yeast forward, so we let the yeast do most of the speaking. But I think that's where Tom's brewing experience has come in to be most worthwhile, because he's done a lot of this. He knows so much about the science behind the brewing that he is a true professional in every sense of the word. And I mean, if once you walk through this 14,000 square feet, you're going to realize that he's got quite a project on his hands right now. And when this is done, you'll see the difference between a guy like Tom opening a brewery and perhaps somebody else who hasn't really done it before. And no disrespect to any of the beer styles or brewing of any of the guys that maybe haven't done what Tom's done, but you'll see it in just the brewery and the operation side when we start to walk through and take a look at the space. So,
well,
let's do that.
Yeah, let's head over there. I think we have two hands.
You're using one hand with your recorder. How about we put a beer in each other's hands?
Oh, man, he's just right on that. While we're getting that, let's take a short break, and we'll come back with a beer in our hands. Okay, Mike?
That works for me.
All right, Mike, we're back.
Okay.
You're looking in the fridge.
I still don't have a glass in my hand, but I'm looking in there.
Eric, it's a fridge. You've got tons of ponies in there.
We've got a lot of corn and keg 1/6 barrels, and we've actually got these funny little 2-gallon, 2.5-gallon things that we rig up. So, we just basically put a hand tapper on it on one side, and then we tap the other side with, you know, CO2 so that we put a nice pressure on it. And that's how we carb all of our test batches right now. But just want to go on record, we don't brew any of these in-house yet. I know we're not legally allowed to do so we still do that over on my driveway. But we bring them over here to throw them in a temperature-controlled environment to carb them and get everything ready to roll.
Let's explore that just a second. Okay, so one of the points of starting up a brewery is obviously you have to become legally able to brew the beer. Right. Is that quite a process?
Yes, it's a process, but it's just a lot of paperwork. You know, it's a lot of admin, and if it depends on how you structure your business as well, you have to provide a lot of information for everybody that's touching your business. If they are, you know, ownership of X percentage or more. So, you know, I think if you have a bunch of investors and it becomes kind of a nightmare of paperwork. But for us, we were really lean and mean. We've got, you know, four guys that back us, and it put us in a pretty good position to where they're letting us do most of the day-to-day operating, and we just kind of work within kind of a set set structure that we've decided upon as far as like here's the things that we're going to do when, here's the timeline for when we're going to be purchasing these pieces of equipment, here's when we're going to be moving in the building, here's when the build-out's going to start, and these guys just kind of help us along the way because they're good businessmen and they trust that we know what we're doing.
I think, Mike, that's called a business plan.
It is.
it's a little different to just somebody brewing and then saying they want to do a big brewery. Right. There is a lot to it. Well, sure. Eric is
this is our business plan.
Look at the
This was our old name too. Yeah.
This is Arcane Brewery. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about the name a little bit. So you're showing us the business plan, which was the Arcane Brewing Company. I don't know if we should say that or not.
No, that's totally
that's
fine.
Okay.
Totally fine.
Now you're going to Penrose.
Yes.
What's the story behind that?
Well, being a Brit, you might appreciate it. This was inspired by a design, a tiling pattern that Roger Penrose had created. What we found, though, and what I should say what Tom found, was he loved the beauty and the aesthetic of the pattern, but what really inspired him was the science and the math behind it. And so he, when he described it to myself and the designer we were working with, he described it as the perfect balance between art and science. So, of course, you know, Tom being Tom and Tom being this, like, very methodical, very mechanical mind, very, you know, straightforward thinker, you could tell he was really excited about this and inspired by it. So of course we found that was perfect for what we were trying to do. You know, for a craft brewery, we're all well aware of right now, there's a lot of issues with naming, trademark, and stuff like that. So we found that with Penrose, we got this kind of design aesthetic that we could work within. We got a name that really had zero definition beyond the guy, Roger Penrose.
Explain who Roger Penrose was.
Well, he's a British physicist, and he's a brilliant man who's done a lot for just kind of, you know, the science, physics and science in general. But what he had created here was very artistic, and it kind of led us to other guys like M.C. Escher and Impossible Shapes and Objects and things like that that we found once we kind of went down the rabbit hole, we were all in. We love this. So it gives us a lot of design latitude as well. So
well, I did do a little bit of research about the name Penrose before we came, and I did find out that it comes from mainly down in Cornwall and some Welsh border towns. Okay. There's a Penrose down in Cornwall. Okay. And I think one of the first times that the name Penrose appeared in the United States was around about 1622, which is almost 4:30, Mike. So
very interesting. Okay. But anyway, interesting, Phil.
Yeah, it's historical. That's what it is.
I'm here for a very brief period of time.
Hey, look who just,
all right,
who just walked in here?
This
is Tom Corder.
Oh, it is Tom. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Pleased
to know you.
Nice to meet you.
How you doing? All right.
Doing well.
So you're here we are with the man himself. So you're headed off to a different locale to do some other stuff.
I'm down in the city to drink some beer. So
well, hey, you know, that's great. We were having a great conversation here with Eric, and I guess, you know, what's the you seem okay. I'm an old guy, right? As everybody knows, you seem very young. How long were you with the Goose Island Brewing Company?
I was with Goose for about 5 years. And I was with Anheuser-Busch for about 3.5 before that. So I worked in their pilot brewery, Anheuser-Busch's larger brewery in Georgia, and then went to Goose as brewery manager and innovation manager and all things above. So
cool. Well, you've got quite a pedigree, as we were saying.
Yeah.
What's your biggest challenge right now?
Getting this thing pushed through. You know, it's just every day there's a new step that we need to do. If it's not permits, it's licensing or T-shirts or tap handles or getting the equipment in. So it's just hitting that final stage and trying to get things rolling through.
Yeah, and right now we're looking. Eric is pouring out some beer from one of the containers so we can at least have a sampling.
These are probably still a little ahead of this, but
it's in fine glassware. But hey, we understand. Now this, I'm going to guess, is this a black ale?
This is a black ale.
Okay.
This is our Belgian style black ale.
Good smell to it. Now, it's always very difficult when you do an audio podcast to kind of convey to people what you have in your hand. And then about the beer as well. We always like to get that joke.
Yeah.
So
it's
Mike,
old, but it's it's still not good.
Mike, what are you thinking right now? I mean,
the smell is really good, and I love the Belgian style beers. This is excellent. It's got a great flavor. The carbonation is not overwhelming, so that's good in my book.
It's yeah, this close. Is a little low for what it needs to be.
We showed you
kind of our primitive carb system here right now, but we're doing our best to try to get a bunch of stuff ready for upcoming events we have in the next month and a half. So
what sort of alcohol? Because I know you describe yourselves as Belgian style session ales. Yep. So what are we looking at here?
This one's 6. So this is actually the highest kind of the ones we've been toying around with. Yep. Our others are right around 4.3, and then just over 5 for our pale. So this one's the higher of the group, but still not a lot of alcohol kind of heat. It's a little more dry, a little more roasty character that kind of comes through.
Yeah.
That's that alcohol.
Yeah,
it
sure does.
But not as much roasty as we like to say, roasty toasty. But
this is really good.
Is this a little cool? Should it?
Oh yeah.
Will the flavor come out a little more?
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
That's good.
This warms up.
Yeah.
You know, like Tom said, we're still like this. Probably, I think you just racked this off a few days ago. So, you know, we do our best to try to carb things quickly when we have stuff that we need it for. But you know, sometimes you just got to give it a couple more days, or sit there and rock it like Tom does so often. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, this one just coming out of the fridge too is what 38 degrees. Yeah. Yeah, this should definitely warm up.
Now, are you guys thinking about doing anything in a cask or anything like that, or
that's future plans? I mean, traditionally Belgians aren't cask conditioned; they usually have a little higher carbonation and things like that. So,
I also think that you've picked a great style because next year is the World Cup, and near and dear to my heart is soccer. they're picking Belgium to go far. They
really?
Have a great team. Mm-hmm. So you may be right on the bandwagon there for that one.
Yeah, right.
But this beer is very, very good, and I would say that for those of you who like the lighter dark beers, this is great because it's got that lovely flavor. I almost like it. Almost goes towards the Weiss styles, you know, kind of that wheaty fit, but it's not really there. Mm-hmm. But lighter. Yeah, this is a good winter session ale for me.
Yeah, you could definitely drink a few pints of this.
Yeah, very tasty.
Now, you guys having any issues or any problems with names, coming up with names for the different stuff?
Well, as I showed you earlier with that business plan, we were originally Arcane Brewing Company, and you know, we had gone through the proper process of, you know, search, and when you go through everything and you realize there's no beers, there's no breweries with that name, there's no beers with that name, then you go to the, you know, USPTO website, and then you file, and if there's like a winery or anybody who is kind of dabbling in the spirits as well, now we're realizing that even those guys are kind of stepping out against beer and against breweries. So we actually had a vineyard out in Oregon, I believe it's called Arcane Cellars, that had objected to our trying to register the mark and register the name. And since we were a startup and we didn't have any money anyways, we just figured, screw it, let's go find something else, because we didn't want to waste the money trying to fight that.
Actually, what I was talking about was the name, different names for the beers,
Do you have the same issues with that?
Well, I think we've already found that there's certain things that we've tried to use that when you go through the whole process and you actually try to market, somebody's got some mark that's similar, or, again, like with a wine, we just had an issue with our Saison name. A wine company objected to our attempt to mark the name. But you know, for us, we're really aware that there's so much concern out there right now that we're trying to do our homework first and not put ourselves in a predicament down the road.
Sure.
So we just want to put it forward there that there are no concerns if you'd like to call your beer the Britain Yankee Session Ale. We have no objections to that whatsoever.
Well, that's recorded now.
So we got a black ale going on here. Other styles that you think, I mean, you've got a lot of beers in there, and I'm sure some of these are not going to make the cut.
Yep.
This is kind of like the NFL, right? You know, you've only got a certain amount of taps that you can have and certain amount of tanks, right? Yep. So what are the top beers that you think is this one going to make the cut? I mean, this is great stuff. I love this. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, for us, I think the first four, we know what the first four are. I mean, we're going to put out a Belgian single called Proto Gratis. We're going to put out a Belgian-inspired pale called P2. This is called Navette. And then our French Saison, which is to be named, because our last, we were calling it Levant for a while, and then we realized that is not going to be an option. So those are the first four beers that we'll put out. Keep in mind, though, we have a tap room. So we'll have a tap room with ten handles on that we'll also be able to put a few more beers on. So we're working
now,
on that.
As far as what is going to make the grade for the first session and stuff, do you guys have a testing group that you go through that, or are you just kind of going by your own taste and say this is good
stuff like that? Right now, we've gone through just kind of ourselves and our friends and our investors, and kind of talked through it and what they like, what we think will do well. When we do open up, we'll have our tap room here that we'll be able to put random beers on and get the consumer's opinion. Say, sure. if this sells well, if people like it, if there's a good response to it, there's more of a chance that it'll hit the market in bottles and draft right. elsewhere.
We like to think that we've been aware for a while now, having done what we've done in our previous experience. So I think you'll start to see the world of craft, at least the ones that are aged craft drinkers like ourselves, mm-hmm. starting to shift more towards session beers. I mean, do we think any of our first four beers are going to make the top 250 Beer Advocate beers? Probably not, because it's not going to be a double IPA and it's not going to be a bourbon barrel aged this or that.
Right.
But I do think that people are more appreciative of a good quality, well-made, sessionable beer. And by well-made, I mean, you know, you got four, four, two for a Saison and a single with just a fair amount of malt character. If there's any off flavor in there, you're going to be able to find it like that.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I want to make sure that we're all aware of moving forward, is that, you know, it's the quality and it's well made. It's intended outcome is what we're all about. And that's really what, for us, will define the cut.
Mm-hmm.
If it's meeting our expectations, meeting our standards.
And of course, before we leave, Tom has to rush out of here down to somewhere else where he's going to be drinking beer.
Chicago Beer Society picnic
or something?
No, unfortunately not that today. I already had previous plans, some friends block parties.
So. Oh, okay. Hey, yeah. Even better. So you've got to take beer to real people. Thank you very much indeed for dropping in, Tom.
We
hope to come back and follow you back.
Yeah,
much
right
appreciated. On. All right, we'll take that break now then, shall we?
Then we need to take a walk.
And then we'll take a walk on the wild side, baby.
All
okay.
Right.
I'm Roger Penrose. I'm the Emeritus Rousbaugh Professor of Mathematics at the University of Oxford. I've been interested in issues to do with consciousness and its connection with deep issues in physics for many years. There is a current view that consciousness is something which arises from some complicated computation.
What?
So we have our computers, and people think that because they can do things amazingly fast and they can calculate very quickly and they can play chess extremely well, that they're superior to us even, and that it's only that some complicated aspect of this computational activity, somehow consciousness arises from that.
What?
Now, my view is quite different from this.
All right, brain. You don't like me and I don't like you. But let's just do this and I can get back to killing you with beer.
And we're back. Mike, we have in our hand another sample. It is their single, which I think, Eric, you said it was called
Protogratis.
Protogratis, and you described it as a?
Well, it's a potter's beer. I think Flemish or French for father's beer. It's originally the beer style that monks would drink as part of their rations, their daily rations. So it's lower ABV, lighter, not like those big Belgian doubles and triples that a lot of Trappist breweries are known for.
But I'm tasting it, and it has still got a lot of flavor. It's very nice. I mean, this is a good summer beer, and I'm going to say, I hate to say this, but I'm going to anyway. I think the ladies will like this.
Yeah.
It's because it's a little lighter, but it's got lots of flavor, right?
Yeah, but something like this in the summertime is going to go like crazy because it's light. It's not super heavy. It's not going to bog you down. Nope. They're gonna pick this over anything heavier.
And to me, it doesn't have a high citrus profile.
Mm-mm.
It's there, but it's not high. And I just don't like that. I don't like the high citrus. But
it can be a lot mm-hmm. off-putting, and as we tasted in some stuff, it actually can make it a little, not sour, but a drier
yep.
tasting in your mouth and give you a dry. And this is very subtle.
Mm-hmm. Very, very refreshing.
Very yes.
We've walked back whilst we've been chatting, and we are now standing in a large open space.
This would be reason for the longboard.
Oh, yeah. There's even a skateboard.
My daughter would
there,
like
yeah.
this area.
Right? We find ourselves skateboarding from one end to the other just to try to get from one side to the other really quick.
Yeah. So what's this going to be?
So where you're standing right now is where we'll have grain handling and our brew house. So grain handling is on order. We'll be here, I think, in the next week. Our brew house is actually here, not in this building, but is in the town next to us in Batavia, sitting waiting for our riggers to bring it over once our floors are done. So straight ahead, you'll have 3-vessel, 40-barrel JV Northwest copper-clad system with our two hot and cold liquor tanks there, a heat exchanger kind of tucked into the corner, and our carbon water filter. What you're standing right there next to is the boiler room. So we'll have plenty of space back here for all this stuff, which is where process will start.
And you've got the electrical points. I mean, this is very interesting seeing it from ground up. You've got the electrical points covered up with bags, or
correct,
for obvious reasons.
Correct.
Do you have to have, like, high, what is it, high wattage, 240 or something, or is it just regular, ordinary?
Probably 440 maybe. Coming
yeah, we're going to have 600 actually coming in here. We're gonna have,
wow.
Yep, we have...
ComEd Zappy then.
Big draw, yeah.
Yep. Actually, the reason we have these all covered in bags is we spent last week power washing this whole place. We were up on scaffolding cleaning every inch of this 14,000 square feet because I don't think it's been cleaned for probably the 40 years since it's been built. So we took years and years and years of dust and dirt out of here. So
yeah.
A lot of it's still on the floors. We haven't done the floors yet because we have our tile company coming in about a week and a half to put in our tile, and we got our other GC in here next week starting to cut our trench drains. So
I'm assuming that at some point in time you're going to have a health inspection, right?
Oh,
I
yes.
Imagine that.
Oh yes, yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll have that probably, I mean, obviously not before we have everything in place and we're more or less operational, but yeah, that'll happen right before we open.
Okay. So we're in the place where it all starts.
Yep.
So what comes next? So
as we walk, obviously your viewers are listening, so they're not seeing. So we're actually leaving.
Well, Mike's good with the camera.
Yeah. We're leaving one room and moving into another room. So one of the things that's unique about our brewery is it's 14,000 square feet, but it's pretty compartmentalized. So you've now walked from what we're calling the brew house area into the cellar, which will be our clean room. So we have six tanks on their side right now that we just received a few weeks back. We'll stand them up in a few weeks, but once we have the brew house come in, that rigger will also stand these up for us. We have four 40-barrel fermenters here and two 40-barrel bright tanks. This is where we will do all of our fermentation, and which is kind of nice, too, is we've got it isolated. We can keep these doors closed, so we keep all the crap out of the air from...
Plus temperature control and everything, yeah.
And it actually feels cooler in this inner sanctum.
The ceiling's lower in here in this room than the other room. It's more vaulted.
Yep.
This room, especially, and it's got the insulation and everything else, it'd be ideal for temperature control and everything like that. So this is really an ideal room.
The next step for us in here is we're going to... we've already washed all the walls, cleaned everything, but we're going to wrap everything with a polypropylene, which is kind of like an FRP panel. So it will be very similar, just a plastic coating to go over everything so that we can clean everything just a little bit easier next time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
What used to be in this building, do you know?
I believe this portion of it was being rented by the city of Batavia to store some of their outdoor cleaning equipment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't all one project
nope,
then?
Nope. Yeah. We occupy three different subdivided sections of this one long building. So, and as we walk from the fermentation cell, you walk from one side to the other. You got fermentation vessels will be over here, bright tanks will be over here, but we will also have our keg washer over here, and our bottling line will be over here to start.
And there's a tile sample down there.
Yep, these are our tiles, so we'll have all this stuff. It kind of helps you. If you do tiles, you don't necessarily have to slope the concrete in the floors. You can just slope the way the tiles get installed, they slope themselves towards the drain. So it's a pretty cool way, and it's actually, it looks a little nicer, and it doesn't really cost all that much more. So.
Yeah. That's going to be nice. Little tiles down there. It is. That's good.
Yep.
And then we come into the next area.
Walk into this next room, which is actually probably the biggest room in the building. Immediately to your left is our dock. So we've got our own private loading dock. And this is more or less where we'll have storage and a little bit of finishing down the road. So we'll have all of our pallets of kegs and bottles and stuff stored over here, along with some dry storage. And then we'll have a big walk-in cooler as you continue to walk this way. Actually, this will be a drive-in cooler, I should say.
A drive-in cooler for a forklift.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you got ceiling clearance enough here to put two pallets stacked on end for cases of beer, and I think you can get three pallets on end for kegs. So, you can kind of see where we've drawn out the line. This is the cooler area,
right?
And as you walk from the cooler back then south towards the front entrance of the building, you're walking into what will be our barrel storage room. So this will be where we do all of our oak barrel aging.
Ooh.
So isolated oak aging, which is nice because we intend to do a lot of wilds and sours. And obviously you don't want that to be, you don't want those bugs floating around your brewery if you can keep them in one space. So Tom's got this set up so it will have an overhead that will be open and closing based on just movement. So sensor motion sensor. And that'll be kind of nice, so you don't have to worry about just keeping this open all the time. And again, temperature controlled in here as well, so we can control everything that we need to make sure that that beer is given nice. Just a nice place to rest.
And then from there, I think we were talking earlier off air, if you will, about the tap room, which will be the final piece of the puzzle here.
Yep, we're back to where we started right now. So we're walking from the barrel room into the tap room, and this is about 1,400 square feet. Capacity of about 63 seats, but it's set up like a communal room, so it's like a visitor center. Big long community tables, 10 beers on draft, no TVs, no food. This is not a brew pub. This is a place where you come visit, get some fresh beer on in a growler, get some tasty beers to go, or sit and have a couple pints and hang out with us
and chat.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole thing about.
That's where we'll record the next one.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I say. That's what we really like. That's what we intended when we started doing the Britain Yankee as a quote-unquote virtual pub. So much has been lost in the British pub with the social aspect. That's where you went to sit down, enjoy a pint of beer, have a chat, as we say, about anything and everything.
Yeah.
And we do.
We do.
Mostly nothing we talk about, really.
Well, that's what it's all about. Sometimes it's just venting your week.
Yeah.
Venting
your what?
Your week.
Oh, your week.
How your week went. Like yours was.
Yeah, it was a crappy week this week. But it wasn't crappy. It was just busy and frustrating. And, it wasn't busy in a good way.
Yeah. So it's a way to relieve stress.
I think it is. I think it's a way to sit down, relax, enjoy something that is tasty, delicious. And I'm certainly anxious to get in here because Belgian styles, I don't see it around here anymore.
Have you
seen it anywhere?
No, not really. And I'm excited because I'm right over in Batavia. So this is going to be,
7 minutes by car.
Yeah, 7 minutes from my house. So, this is going to be where I'm at unless I'm out of town. So,
love to hear that.
Well, let's take another quick break, and then we'll come back and talk to Eric a little bit about how he sees his distribution channels flowing. Where can we get it other than the brewery? That's what I want to know. And when? That's the important thing. Okay, take a break.
Belgium is right up there with Germany, England, and the Czech Republic as one of the world's great beer countries. And when it comes to variety, Belgium is number one.
So in Belgium, we have 120 types of beer, and that's because we like using all different types of natural ingredients. So if you drink Belgian beer, you might recognize sour cherries, kriek, as we say, raspberries, chamomile flowers, licorice, ginger, juniper berries, honey, seaweed. As long as it's natural, it's okay. We really have a beer culture. We don't drink to get drunk, we drink to enjoy different types of beer and make quality time with friends. What more do you want? I mean, it saves a lot of shopping, and it's a good excuse.
Who needs an excuse? When there are so many types to try, and an inviting tasting room with friendly people, it's time to drink beer like a Belgian.
So we're sitting back in the office, which is the coolest part here, and I know this is probably where Eric does a lot of his work on day-to-day. I'm sure it's a busy day. We were talking about how the tap room... I should get that right, how the tap room was going to be set up. And I said, hey, you're going to have other beers here other than your own. And Eric said, no, because we're not licensed to have guest beers. And I said, tell me a bit more about that. I didn't realize there were different distribution laws or selling laws at breweries.
Yeah, that's defined in both state statute. And then it's kind of cheers. All depends on how your local municipality wants to set you guys
cheers.
Up. But cheers, guys.
Yeah.
Cheers.
You don't hear a clink because we're drinking it out of plastics.
It's that's okay.
Sampling glasses.
Still waiting on our new glassware.
Yeah, there you go.
I digress. So, there was no reason we couldn't get a brew pub license, even though we weren't going to be a brew pub. This is the triple hop, so it's got a little bit more hoppiness to it. Yeah. But we decided, because of the way we had presented ourselves to our local community and the way we intend to go out to market was, when we open our tap room, we are going to be a visitor center of sorts, more just a spot to come try some beer, sample some beer, get some growlers to go, take a tour. We did not want to be a restaurant. We did not want to be a quote-unquote tavern, which is what a lot of people view tap rooms as.
Sure.
We didn't want the local community to think we were coming in to try to take away business from the other restaurants and bars in town. So even though we could have had a brew pub license, which would have allowed guest taps, we thought, well, we'll just get just a typical brewer's license, manufacturer's license, which allowed us to serve our own beer produced on premise, but no others. Because it still fell in line with what we were trying to do, and if you know things ever change down the road, we can always go apply for a brewer's license at the time when we need to renew. Mm. So,
interesting.
Brew pub
license. Yeah, that's interesting, because, yeah. I mean, I can... You say you don't want it to go against, don't want the local restaurants and bars to be offended, but I would think it would be a plus if you guys were, one, promoting your own products, which you really want to do, and two, it's only going to benefit them that, yeah, I sampled this over a Penrose, and yeah, I'll have that with my steak, or I'll have that with my, with my burger. You know, it can only enhance and promote their restaurant and their business more if there's a quality product like yours.
I think we can accomplish that with the tap room without food. I think we can show them through events out in the local community, mm-hmm. and we will do cool events in here. Like where you're sitting right now is technically the barrel room. Picture when this barrel room is floor to ceiling oak barrels, and then we have a long community table in the middle of it, and all these chairs, which will then be painted red, will be on either side of it, and we'll be hosting a beer dinner in here with one of the local restaurants.
Sure.
So we'll still do stuff like that.
Like a beer pairing.
Exactly. We'll do a five-course dinner with our friends from Toda Madre or Movable Feast or Gracious Hall and let them come in. They serve all the food. They have the license to manage and serve food.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to worry about that licensing. We don't have to worry about the health department coming in and looking at our kitchen. It makes things just a lot simpler.
It does. And then it helps promote them, too.
Exactly. Then we get to promote another local restaurant and let them come in and work with us in our space.
And they can promote it on their site.
Exactly.
So you get the double exposure for both of them.
Exactly. And I think a tap room gives us a lot of ability to do all those things we want to do right away, but be a little bit more conscious about how we enter this small community. Because it is small, and it's tight-knit. Once you get to know those local business owners downtown, and I've met a bunch of them, great people, cannot wait to support us, so willing to do whatever they can, and I just feel like I owe it to them to try to bring more to this town as opposed to try to just take what's already here.
Sure. So let's examine a little bit about when you get into full distribution. Who's going to have your beers initially? Is it just going to be local establishments in Geneva, and there are a lot of them. It's a very good place to come for tourism.
Yep. Plus, Binnie's is local right here too, and that's a good place to start, definitely.
So are you gonna have just kegs initially? You're gonna start bottling. What's the plan?
Our plan is to initially launch with draft only. Gives us a little bit of time to figure out what people are gravitating towards. Mm-hmm. We draw that cut line as we talked about earlier, but we don't know what the public's perception will be yet. So for me to assume I know exactly what people are going to want to drink and how much they'll drink versus one of my other beers, it seems silly for me to package those beers without really having given them a trial. So we'll do some draft, put it out at select locations around the Fox Valley, and then Chicago. Those are going to be our primary focus markets to start. We only have limited capacity. We got a big brew house. We got some fermentation capacity, but we don't necessarily want to get too far out over our skis and say open up 100 new accounts, have everybody buy beer, and then 2 weeks later be out of beer in 50 out of those 100 accounts.
Right.
So I want to be prescriptive in that we go to the right places that want to have a longer term relationship with Penrose and work with us consistently, and then we'll grow together.
What's your what's the timeline on this? I mean, obviously we are in September? Where are we? Yeah,
yep,
September,
September,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, time goes so quickly.
Yeah.
We're in September. You've got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. When are we going to see the first brews coming off in a barrel? Are you distributing them yourselves? Or?
Actually, our friends at Windy City are going to be doing the distributing for us. Yep.
Folks at Two Brothers, right?
Very happy, yep.
Okay.
Formally, yeah. Jason and Jim were offered a fine compensation package for relinquishing control of
we
that
did
company
not know that.
To Reyes. Yeah, the Reyes Corporation now owns Windy City Distributing.
Well, that's good. We like them. That's real good.
So
you know what that means then, don't you? That at our subsidiary bar, John's Tavern in Winfield, I think he'll be able to get their beers. We're going to recommend them.
Yeah, he will.
So what timeline are we looking at?
Again, you say there's a lot of work. Up front at the tap room, yes, there's more work than we think we're going to be able to get done before we launch beers to market. But in the back, look, there's not a whole lot to do other than cut those floors, cover those walls, and bring in equipment.
Construct everything.
Construct everything.
Yeah, it's
so
right there.
Believe it or not, when everything starts on Monday morning, we're looking at probably 6 weeks before all that stuff's done.
Wow.
So, you know, that would be, puts us into middle of October when we have our first brew days on the commercial system, which means, you know, first part of November is when we expect now first beers to market.
So. Now, you're talking about you're starting with the draft only. When you start up, are you going to have a bottling line or a canning line or both?
We will have a bottling line. We are not going to do cans to start. We're going to do single 750 milliliter bottles, but we're actually going to focus more of our energy towards four-pack 12-ounce. Some of those beers that we were sampling earlier, again, we think are going to be beers that people would be able would enjoy to take home and have in their fridge, you know, where they're not going to be overly expensive either. You know, four-pack will probably be about $8.99.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think we find that when you discover a night, even though you're saying your session beers, that which means that they're going to be, you know, 5-6% whatever. If you find a beer that's a really good beer, but you don't want to have too many of them, you know, it's just a treat every now and again with dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think people are still going to have, you know, the Millers and all the other traditional beers in their fridges, but they're going to discover these other beers, and this is tremendous that we're getting, you know, local Belgian beers.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say how much I'm excited about this. This is going to be really good. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So work to do. We're looking around. You've got the Penrose T-shirts. I'm seeing over there a couple of tapping handles. Yep. You are just rocking and rolling here. So, you know, maybe November the 19th would be a good day to have your first brew go out the door, because that's my birthday.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We would like very much to have our beers in market by, you know, end of October, first part of November.
Right.
Again, we're looking at, you know, 6 weeks is probably what we're guesstimating is a conservative estimate for when we get that back of house ready to roll. But it could be sooner. You know, I mean, if we're up and rolling by, you know, the second week in October, if we've got, you know, everything, the stars align, you know, we could get beers out. It takes about, you know, 20 days for us to get a beer out from our from our system. So
yeah,
okay.
If we open that, if we get beers out, then tap room should be at least a week or 2 weeks behind that. So we're looking at right before the holidays opening a tap room.
Oh, there you go.
Sounds a little insane too.
Yeah, so, but
no, you know, great idea.
We're definitely looking forward to coming back and doing a follow up on the progress and see how everything's shaped up and check out the tap house.
Yeah, and very excited to hear about beer dinners. I think
For sure.
That would be great, because, you know, most of the beer dinners that I've seen are you know, the restaurant comes in, provides the beer, provides the food, but the beers are the beers that we already see. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any that are craft brewery beers.
Right.
You know, they're out of a bottle. These are fresh beers.
Yeah.
I mean, draft is fresh. Draft is fresh.
One of the fun things we get to do, being, you know, where we are and what we've kind of planned for, is, you know, we've got this big 40 barrel system in the back, but we've also got a 1 barrel pilot system that we've been brewing a ton on, which is where you get all these beers.
In your driveway.
In my driveway, exactly. Not in the building.
There you go. Not in the building. We know a lot of people like that.
When we are in the building and we are doing that, and we're going to do a beer dinner with, say, one of our local restaurant partners, we fully intend to have that chef come in a couple months ahead. We'll talk about the menu, and we'll pick one pairing, whether it's the entree or it's the dessert course, or if this guy wants to do 7 courses, whatever it would be, they will brew a beer specifically for that event. So we will do another, we'll do a batch of beer
he may also incorporate into the cooking
itself. Exactly. So, you know, you bring a chef in, and a lot of time those guys, their minds go in a million different directions.
Oh, sure.
You know, Mike, we should have in the summer next year a Britain Yankee barbecue. You are the barbecue master, I know.
There you go,
you are the barbecue master. You've cooked many a good sausage on my barbecue.
Yes.
You've Thank handled you. My wieners, if I should say that. But,
and your chickens.
But hey, there you go. The Britain Yankee barbecue. How about that? We can come in. You can set up. They can brew the beers. Great. Anyway, really good. So, Eric, we really appreciate your time today. Mm-hmm. I know you're a busy man. It's good for you to sit down. Relax, have a beer. This is the premature tap room talk. We'll be back, hopefully, if you allow us to come back on your opening day, maybe, or even, you know, once you're open a week or so, we'll come back, take a look, we'll do comparative photos.
Perfect.
You know, we're gonna certainly, from what we've tasted here, the couple of beers we tasted, there's There's greatness here.
Great.
And it's so local. It's great to us. You know, the western suburbs need it.
I mean, we used to have to drive, you know, to Wisconsin to get anything decent, and then it was Chicago. Now it's in our backyard.
Yep.
And how much?
It's in your backyard.
It's in my. You know, you got
Chicago's that far.
You got John's down the street. For me, I finally get something in my backyard that I don't have to drive a half hour to get to.
That's right. And we've been to several bars that we really like because people are starting to put on really good selections of craft beers.
Yeah. Across the river, right by Dairy Queen, they redid the restaurant that used to be a barbecue and
the old rib house.
Yeah. And they redid that, and my wife actually went there for lunch, and it's phenomenal. I could see these beers there. Definitely be a great fit.
All right. Again, Eric, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom, wherever you are. Yeah.
Okay, we appreciate it. And as we always do on our shows, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from him.
And goodbye from Eric. Cheers. Cheers. And it's a soft clank because it's plastic. You know? Okay, that's good. Hey, I wonder if we can get shares in this place, Mike.
I don't know. We'll have to check out the business plan. You keep them busy. I'll go grab it.
I'll go grab it. Okay,
bye.
Bye. Okay.
Britain Yankee!
Britain Yankee!
I'll have a pint. No. Go, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
A pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.